the glory of love.
Music from Kathy Tricoli, The Glory of Love. Before that, Larnell Harris and 3 Days Blind, and good morning to you. It is about 12 minutes past the hour. That'd be past 8 o'clock here in our central time zone. And Heike Joe Dodge is with us this morning, and Dr. Don Clark joins us from Garden Valley, Texas, where, Don, you tell me it's 70 degrees and a little muggy, huh?
It is. This morning it's a little muggy, and woke up this morning, it was 70 degrees. We've had cooler weather earlier this week, but that is now all gone.
Well, you know, you have my sympathy, because properly mid-April is spent up to your knees in snow. And we're experiencing that delightful condition up here in Minnesota today. After I can't keep this up.
My children were so disappointed we didn't have another snow day today.
Yeah, school going.
Well, yeah, that's probably good, because it's tax day and people can't get to the post office, so maybe they'll give them another day.
Well, yeah, and kind of the cold, stark white atmosphere with high wind kind of fits that tax day. That whole feeling goes together somehow here. But we will wend our way to the post offices and deposit our tax returns dutifully. On this, those of us who haven't done it yet, like me. Who always?
Oh my goodness!
Well, that's the advantage the software gives you. You can wait to the last minute. And actually, I filed federally electronically, and already got a reply back from the IRS. They said, "Yes, we've got you now, right where we want you." And they accepted the returns. So I think that's part of the day's duties. Another of the day's duties is to straighten out the Big Bang Theory. Dr. Don Clark is a biochemist, member of the board at CreationMoments.com. And we often talk about creation versus evolution and science versus faith, and this is spot on. This is right in our kitchen, as they say in baseball. Don, the Big Bang Theory, what does it say? When did it first come about, and does it necessarily rule out a creator?
Well, I think it does rule out of the creator. Let's answer the first one. The last question first. Mm-hmm. because it takes the creator out of the picture. And the Big Bang Theory basically says that we started with a singularity. That is the point sometime in time where everything kind of began, and there was nothing there. Then all of a sudden there was something there, and it exploded. And then created matter throughout the universe. So that's kind of in a nutshell what the Big Bang Theory says. And the reason why it came about was because of the experiments with the looking at the red shifts from galaxies and stars, and it seemed that the further the star was away from Earth, the greater the red shift. So it gave the impression that the stars in the universe were moving away from each other, and possibly moving away from a center of explosion. And so that was kind of the genesis of the whole thing. So that was probably in the 40s, I think, when the Big Bang Theory came about with Hubble and the redshift. But that was kind of the impetus for it.
So there was nothing expressed in the theory as to how this matter started, what initiated the bang.
Oh, no, it was just, theories have come and gone since that time, and one of the theories is that, we've got expanding and collapsing universes, and the way our universe started was that we had a previous universe that collapsed into basically nothingness, and then exploded again into a new universe.
Hmm. So kind of an endless cycle, back and forth?
That's correct.
Okay.
So that doesn't leave any room for a creator.
And we're getting quite a bit of echo again. And Heike, I noticed when you stepped away there, we lost the echo. So something's happening on your end there.
I went and put the dogs out, so I put my mute button on.
Ah, that's it. Well, I don't hate to mute you. I don't want to do that.
I'll put mute on and see if that helps.
Okay, we'll do that. Yeah, then we'll just. Yep, the echo's disappeared entirely. So that's it's coming through Heike's microphone. So, well, we'll solve that problem in due course. Don, you've given us an article that expresses some scientific opinions that there are a lot of holes to fill in the Big Bang theory. So it falls short in certain areas. That doesn't hold true. A couple of them really intrigue me, but you're the scientist here. Which ones of these seem to be the most significant of most, or can be explained to the layman? This is pretty complex stuff.
Well, yeah, unfortunately it is, but some of them. Let's take a look at, for example, population 3 stars as being one of them. Now, a population 3 star is a star that has only hydrogen and helium as its fuel source, and a sun or a star like our sun is a fusion reaction going on a big scale, and so it takes hydrogen then because of the heat and the pressure it fuses that into helium, and then helium becomes heavier elements. I mean, it takes hydrogen and then it makes deuterium, and from deuterium you can get helium, and then ultimately some larger elements. The Big Bang theory would suggest, well, we should see a lot of these population 3 stars, and indeed we don't. So there aren't a lot out there, and so especially, you know, the further out in space that we look, we should see more, because the theory is that the further we look, the greater we're looking back in time, and we don't see that. What we see is stars that have more than just hydrogen, deuterium, and helium in them, and there are very few population 3 stars.
Well, do Big Bang proponents have an explanation for this?
I'm sure they have a workaround. I'm not aware of what the workaround is, but they have basically, with all of these that we'll probably discuss today, and more that are in the article. They either ignore it and don't address it, or address it in a very convoluted way and not a simple, not a simple explanation that, oh, well, if you take this into account in our theory, then that explains why that doesn't exist. That's just one kind of explanation as to why we shouldn't. They really don't have a solid explanation as to why there shouldn't be more of these if their theory holds.
You know, one of the article's article paragraphs here, one of the reasons that catches my eye is that the philosophy claims the universe has no center. Now, just pure logic suggests to me that if there was a Big Bang to start things, that everything would fly off in rather uniform distribution. And you should be able to calculate a center if you're looking at red shifts and calculating the speed of various heavenly bodies away from some direction. Just a little triangulation should get you to where there is an apparent center of the universe. But some of the proponents of the Big Bang theory seem to dismiss that as being a philosophical consideration and not a physical one. What do you think about that? Stephen Hawking among them, by the way.
Yeah, well, actually, the more research that's being done, and you actually brought up 2 points. One is that the proponents of the Big Bang say, well, there's no center because it all exploded and everything is moving away, and so we shouldn't be able to find a center. But at the same time, We're getting a lot of echo.
Yeah, at least I'm getting the echo back again. Yeah, Heike, if you have a question, just go ahead and ask. I hate to cut you out of the conversation.
No, I was just going to say one thing. It sounds to me like there is so much more faith needed to believe this Big Bang Theory than there is faith in Christianity. That was my only comment.
Well, it's worth hearing. I think you're right. I agree with you.
Yeah, no, that's it's definitely the case, because if you don't want to believe in God and the God of the creator of the universe, in the heavens and the earth and everything in it, then you have to make up your own very complex story for, you know, how things came about. But anyway, there are two points here. One, the universe should be uniform. You stated that, gee, if there was a Big Bang, we should see stars. Well, you didn't say this, but you implied it, that stars should be uniformly distributed, galaxies should be uniformly distributed throughout our universe. And in fact, what we find is just the opposite, that the stars in the galaxies are not distributed uniformly across the universe, but appear to be clustered around concentric circles around a center. And so if you could think of it, it's a flat kind of pan. Our universe, the picture of our universe that we're getting, is a flat pancake, and there's concentric rings about a center, and galaxies and stars, star clusters are on the rings, and the rings appear to be 1 million light years apart. So one would call this the stars and the galaxies are actually quantized. So it's like we've got a ring of stars and matter, and then there's nothing in between the space, and then we've got another ring, and there's nothing in between the space. And for me, this is one of the strongest arguments against the Big Bang, because if the Big Bang had occurred, everything would be uniform. Mm-hmm. There would be stars all over the place, and you wouldn't just necessarily have a flat pancake type of thing. You would think of, well, it should be spherical, but it's not at all spherical. It is it's a flat pancake, and you've got these concentric rings.
Now, it's interesting. Now, this kind of takes me back to the middle-aged church position on the earth being the center of the universe, and then there were the seven heavens, seven concentric rings, or in this case, spheres. With the earth at the center of all of them, each at an ascending level up to where God is. And down below him someplace is heaven, and the next level down is the stars and heavenly bodies and so forth. Maybe they weren't that far off.
Well, maybe not. And the more we study these things, and if you don't have your philosophical bias to ignore this type of data, and to wave it on, then, you know, the more you say, well, maybe things were created after all, because there is order to the chaos that we see out in space. It's not chaos at all. It is a beautiful order to it, which we would expect, of course, from a creator God.
But are you saying then that there is an apparent center of the universe?
There is an apparent center of the universe, and it appears some indication is that our galaxy is at that center.
Hmm.
Now, that's the first in itself would be, yes, that would be enough to pause and say, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. You know, maybe the ancients were might have had the inclination that maybe our Earth wasn't necessarily in our center, but I'm not sure that's not even correct anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is to think that if the ancients knew something we didn't, what was the source of that knowledge? Because certainly we can't assume they had the same view of the universe that we do with technology at our disposal and all these centuries of accumulated knowledge that point us sometimes in the right direction, sometimes in the wrong direction, but all of it kind of adds to our understanding. And we have this modern-day picture. Now we go back to the way the ancients viewed the skies, and they were constantly observing the skies and developed some pretty complex models of how stars moved and seasons came and went. Maybe they knew something we didn't, and is it possible that was a spiritual source of information and not a physical one?
Well, certainly from the beginning, even of Adam and Eve, I mean, when... when God was walking in the cool of the garden, you know, with Adam, I mean, if I was Adam, I would certainly be asking questions.
Yeah, what's that? Oh, look at that. What is that?
about everything that, you know, he saw and observed. And of course, you know, God being a loving God would probably be answering those questions and indeed did answer the questions of origin, because they're written down for us now, which at the time were just stories being passed from one generation to the next until apparently we got to Moses and he finally wrote things down. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing, one would say, well, okay, several generations passed before the story got written down, so therefore there was errors in the story. And that's not even correct, because Adam's mind, as we had talked about before on this program, was far superior to ours. His mind was created perfectly. And if we think Einstein was smart, Adam was probably hundreds of times smarter than even, you know, the greatest scientist.
And just to catch listeners up just briefly on why that develops is it's the effect of sin, that somehow, and we laughingly refer to this as Dr. Donna's theory of devolution, that we're not as smart as we used to be because we're farther from the source, and sin has taken us down a notch or two, and we don't have the cognitive abilities, the rational abilities, the logical abilities that Adam had, and we're getting worse by the minute. And in trying to understand some of these theories of the Big Bang, maybe Adam would have had a better shot at it than I do. This is pretty complex stuff, and very mathematical and very exacting, and that also suggests we can be easily bamboozled and fooled by this, because there's not a lot of understanding out there. What scientists do we believe? I mean, these are scientific arguments now that punch holes in the Big Bang theory, and yet there are proponents to the Big Bang theory that, as you say, work around it, maybe don't engage on these issues. Maybe some have enough intellectual integrity to wrestle with this. But where is the scientific community as a whole still firmly locked in the Big Bang theory?
Well, yes, they're firmly locked in the Big Bang. They're firmly locked in evolution, and it really does, you know, come down to a spiritual issue. It's not a matter of you know, what the data says. It's a matter of what you believe, and hence it's become, you know, it's a, in essence, it's a religious. What is your religious belief? And whether you realize it or not, if you're an atheist, you have a religious belief. Your religious belief is that there is no God, and that in itself is a religion. And, you know, the biggest proponent of that religion is secular humanism. And that is what's trying to be taught and has been taught in our, well, it used to be the colleges, and now it's being pushed down into the high schools and even when our kids first go to school. Mm-hmm. That philosophy, that religion, if you will, is being taught in the classrooms.
Now, Heike, I got to ask you. You've got kids in school, and no, I can't see that. Go ahead and click your mic on. You can.
Okay, I was just going to say, Americans don't question what they hear in the media. So, you know, you could hear any crazy thing, and they'll be like, "Oh, that sounds good," you know, and then they go on with their morning coffee. They don't stop to question, does the Big Bang Theory make sense?
Mm-hmm. They don't really. Well, part of it is that we have such high respect for this thing called science, you know, whatever that is, as if it's a monolithic, brilliant force in our society. And really what it is a process. But we tend to look at it as a thing that's always right and irrefutable, which makes it in itself kind of a religion, I think.
My guess is you were going to ask if what my kids are taught in school.
Yeah, have you seen evidence of secular humanism coming home in their?
Well, my oldest is only in third grade, so science is still very elementary at this point. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more of the social sciences that they're covering, and just, you know, like weather, you know, identifying the names of clouds and things like that. But I will be interested to see as they get a little bit older, because we do live in a small farming community that is predominantly Christian, and thus far the school district has shown to me to be very, very much in line with my conservative Christian views, and I know that they are dictated to by the state, and there are certain requirements that they have to meet. My guess is that I won't be as upset with my district as a lot of other parents across America have found themselves to be, especially on the West Coast, where they tend to be very liberal in what they teach.
Would that suggest that homeschooling is maybe less predominant in your area than in others because of the openness of your school district, or do you know a lot of homeschoolers too?
Oh, I know a lot of homeschoolers, and they homeschool for a lot of different reasons. Sometimes they're homeschooling because the individual child has learning disabilities that the parent doesn't feel is getting addressed in school. But most, I can't think of a single homeschooler that I know that isn't also a Christian. Mm-hmm. I know they exist out there. I've heard of them. Mm-hmm. But it does seem that homeschooling and Christianity often go together. So,
well, to lots of us who are believers, the secular humanist model is pretty scary and very destructive, ultimately. Don, is that true? I don't know much about Garden Valley, Texas. Do you have a lot of young families there with kids in school and see these issues locally?
Oh, we do very much. And it depends on what school district that you're in. For example, the community, not Lindale, has a bigger problem, I would say, with this than perhaps the Van.
Now, you've had personal experience, too, with working with textbooks and revising textbooks and evaluating textbooks, have you not? Oh, sounds like we lost him here. Let's see if we've got Don.
Well, he's in Texas, and I know that has made the news, that Texas textbook business, it's big business in Texas, and if you can get your ideas or your textbook into the hands of those in the state that make the decisions, that you can control a lot. Mm-hmm. And Texas is one of those states where, of course, it's a big state with a lot of textbooks to be sold. And there's a lot of control to be had. And the rest of the nation kind of looks at Texas to see what they're up to.
They had a lot of dollars at stake, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, a lot of dollars. And sometimes Texas goes against what the rest of the country wants. I know that's made the news over the last few years, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to go to music here and see if we can get Don back to finish our conversation. Let's listen to Phil Keaggy for just a few minutes, and we'll be back with Heike Joe Dodge and Dr. Don Clark. Music from Phil Keaggy, Beneath the Bloodstained Lintel, the name of the tune. It is 23 minutes now before the hour, and Don Clark is back with us now. We're kind of fiddling with connections here, trying to get everything working. Heike, I think, is back here, too. Heike?
I'm here.
Yeah, and there's no echo at the moment, so that's good. We're talking about the Big Bang Theory, and we've kind of diverged from that off into textbooks and the humanist philosophy of things and teachings in schools, and we've addressed just most of the problems the world is facing, I think, this morning. But we were talking last about Texas and textbooks, and Don, just before we lost touch with you, I was asking about your experience with textbooks and committees and school boards in Texas. I know you've had some experience in that realm.
Well, yeah, yes, I did. I every 10 years, a different, well, the science textbooks, for example, in this case it was the biology textbooks, were reviewed, and some time ago I reviewed the new textbooks that were coming out, and I just looked at one particular issue, but the way this works is that every year they review a different subject. So let's say 9 years ago it was, or 5 years ago it was the biology textbooks, and then the next year was the history textbooks, and so forth and so on.
Now who is they?
Oh, it's the school board. Okay. And the Texas school association. Mm-hmm. But it's mainly a review for the school board. The school board is doing the review of the textbooks, but what they have is an open hearing where you can sign up and give your pros and cons about the various textbooks and which ones are better than others. And then the school board is ultimately left with the decision to select the textbooks for the next 10 years in that subject. Mm-hmm. So it's a big deal in Texas because how Texas goes, because we're such a large state, so goes the rest of the country. And so it is a big deal. And I was involved in reviewing, like I said, the biology textbooks. And so we had several folks on the, let's say, creation side reviewing the textbooks from the origins point of view. And Texas has a statute or a law in place that says that the textbooks must be neutral when it comes to the origins, and it must present both sides of the argument. Well, you can imagine that most textbooks only support the evolutionary point of view. And they do so in such a way that even old, very, very old theories are still in the textbooks. Mm-hmm. And so a bunch of us, got together and we reviewed this for the board and pointed out the errors that were in the textbooks. So like for example, Huckel's pictures of the various embryos and recapitulation, the recapitulation theory that, we start off as fish and mm-hmm. that evolves into, various animals, and we, in the embryonic process, go through our evolutionary history, which has been proven for 50 years that that's a bunch of baloney, mm-hmm. and that even Huckel himself drew those pictures in the sequence that he did to represent his theory, which had absolutely no bearing in fact.
Mm-hmm. And yet you're saying that those pictures were still in the textbooks?
They were still in the textbooks. Hmm. Yes. And then there were many, many issues like that have been disproven for, literally decades, and yet they were still in the textbooks.
Well, were you taken seriously by the school board and the Texas Education Association?
Well, on my presentation, you were only allowed 3 minutes. Now, you also had a paper. You could write a paper and write up your arguments and give that to the board at the time you were called. So you had 3 minutes. And but as long as the board continued to ask questions, you could, you basically had as much time as they would give you. Mm-hmm. And so when I was presenting my material, they kept asking questions. So I wound up having about 10 to 15 minutes of their time exposing some of these things for the school board. And here in Texas, things are a little more complicated because there's a power struggle between the school board and the Texas Education Association, the TEA. Mm-hmm. And the TEA is extremely liberal. They are not...
That would be the teachers union, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, exactly.
It's in essence, yeah.
Texas Educational Association. And they are not... not elected by the people. Of course, the school board is elected by the people, and yet they're extremely liberal, and they are a very deceptive organization. And so at the end of this whole process, the school board charged the TEA to take out all the falsehoods. Mm-hmm. in the textbooks. And of course, the TEA wound up taking out some things, but leaving other things, and so it wasn't...
Now, when you said taking out, does that mean that the Texas Education Association deals with textbook publishers?
Publishers, yes.
Okay. Do they make buying decisions, or just the school board? I mean, I'm wondering why this falls to the Education Association rather than the school board itself to make those decisions.
Exactly, because the school board has the school board can delegate a group of people to handle these things, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, because of the political battles and everything, they've handed it off to this association.
Uh-huh.
Because after all, there's supposed to know exactly. Mm-hmm.
How much public involvement did you see? Was there interest on the part of the general public? I mean, were there lots of people represented with their at the hearings, or just a few?
Oh no, there were the hearing room was completely packed.
Okay,
and went out into the hallway, and there were a lot of interest, especially in the interest in origins in the biology textbooks. Mm-hmm. You had proponents from both sides.
Now, well, that's a commonly accepted battleground. I guess I would have expected that. So,
right, yeah. And the interesting thing is that the Christians, we were, you know, just presenting facts, and the other side was angry, and were just name calling. I mean, it was ugly that you know, these in quote atheists were just, you know, angry that we were proposing that we put non-science into the textbooks. Hmm. Well, non-science was already in the textbooks. We were trying to get the non-science out.
I could just hear the session right now. Yeah, I could see it. I could see red faces and fingers wagging and the whole shooting match. It's amazing how scientists on opposite sides of the same issue can't just get together and deal with the discrepancies one with the other. And this article on the Big Bang Theory seems to be indicative of that, you know, that wall between still exists. And if it's your pet theory, you stick with it no matter what the data seems to suggest. And we found that in so many areas of science. And maybe the problem is the way we look at science. I mentioned earlier that I'm afraid we see it as a religion, that science always has credibility, when in fact science is a method of analysis. Is that accurate?
Yes, I mean, science is a method, and you know, don't think that science is non-biased, because the data may be non-biased, and sometimes the way you can do your experiment is biased, and that's why you have controls and you, mm-hmm. In quote, have peer reviews to see that, well, okay, your you know, conclusions are make some sense from the data that you got, but when everybody, you know, has a certain philosophy, for example, or religion in this case, whether it be a non-God religion or not, science is by no means unbiased. And so, you know, the secular world, for example, most people get the impression that, well, if the science says this, then that's an unbiased opinion, and
must,
that's the way it is.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that could be, you know, there could be nothing farther from the truth than that.
Well, it's interesting, and Dr. Don has sent us this link. We'll include the link in the posting on our audio archives page later today. You'll see Dr. Don's our conversation from this morning go up there, and along with this link. But it would take you'd have to have a day or two. There's so much information here and so many links to follow, but I'm sure you'll find an issue or an idea that sparks your imagination, and you might want to follow up on this. So this is a litany of reasons why Big Bang doesn't work, and I think folks will find it very interesting. Dr. Don Clark, again, biochemist and member of the board of creationmoments.com. I'd like to encourage folks to visit that website, creationmoments.com. There's a link to it. You're probably listening on brokenroadradio.com this morning. Just over to the right-hand side of the page is a link to Creation Moments, and there's a wealth of resources there for your church, for your Bible studies, small group discussions, and the like. I think you'll find it a wonderful resource to have. You might want to just bookmark it on your browser there, and you can visit them early and often. Lots to see and hear there. Don, thank you very much. Appreciate your stopping by again, and we'll look forward to another chat next Monday, okay?
Okay, sounds good. I had a good time this morning.
And, Heike, thanks for your input. Even the echoes were nice. Well, sort of. Music from Russ Lee on this Broken Road Radio Monday morning. Good morning to you.